It's an honor to have you here today. My name is Tim, and I have the great privilege of getting to lead this amazing community of people. And I love Easter. And when I think about the story of Easter, if I'm real honest, here's my thought. I think that the story of Easter is maybe the most beautiful and quite perhaps the most unbelievable story that we talk about in church. If you think about it. Like, if you're a person of faith, this is a weekend that maybe is like a Hallmark day for you and a lot of reason to get excited and to show up at church, and I love that, and I'm with you. But if you're someone that's here and maybe you're not even sure about Jesus, maybe there's a lot of things that come with Jesus that you are glad to accept. I mean, you think Jesus maybe was an incredible moral leader. He was an amazing teacher. If you want to say a religious leader, I mean, the things that he said and he taught, I mean, Jesus is the one where we get things like love your neighbor that we all love to say today, or he also taught love your enemy. I mean, he was just incredible in the things that he taught and the way he lived. But maybe when it comes to this idea that Jesus also rose from the dead, that's where some of you go, that's kind of, you know, that's cute, but it feels a little bit more like the fairy tale part of what we think of when we think of religion. That maybe it makes a really good science fiction story, but I'm not really sure I can believe that. And I just want to encourage you, if that's your thought today, you're not alone. In fact, you might be shocked to hear this. If you've never read the story of Jesus, but his closest friends, his disciples, they're called, that were with him for 3 years, that watched him perform miracles and all those things that we celebrate that he spoke and he taught, even they struggled to believe that Jesus had risen from the dead. You know that? Like, that was a shock. They didn't expect it, and they kind of should have when you think about the fact that Jesus told them multiple times before it even happened. He said, guys, they're going to kill me. They're going to put me in the grave, and on the third day, I'm coming back to life. I mean, he flat out told them, and then as it started to happen, and they killed him, and they put him into a grave, and then in the story, here's what we know is that the women who go to the tomb on the early Sunday morning, they take spices with them because they don't expect there to be a risen Jesus, but a body. And they go to anoint the body, and when they get there, the stone is rolled away. Many of you probably know this story if you've been in church. And there's angels that say, hey, he's not here, he's risen. Go and tell his disciples. So guess what the women do? They go and tell the disciples. Guys, you're never going to believe this. His body's not there. And we ran into this person, this angel. He said, he's risen. And so they didn't believe the women. They run to the tomb, some of them, look inside of it and go, man, where did he go? We lost him. Did somebody take it? They didn't believe that Jesus was risen. And even that same day, Jesus appeared to two men who were walking out of Jerusalem to a town called Emmaus, and he appears to them and said, guys, I'm back, just like the Terminator. I'm here. You can't get rid of me. Go back and tell the disciples. Guess what they did? They went back and told the disciples, you guys aren't going to believe this, but we saw Jesus ourselves. And you know what the story tells us? They still didn't believe. And I'm thinking to myself, wait, these are the guys who were with Jesus, saw him do all the miracles, heard him tell him that he was going to be killed and then come back to life, and then all these people tell him that he's alive, and they still don't believe. And I thought to myself, why in the world did they struggle to believe? And then it dawned on me. It's because dead people don't come back to life, do they? Like, my experience has been that everybody that I know that has passed away is gone. Like, and I don't mean for this to be kind of like direct or harsh, and if you just lost somebody in your life recently, then it can be a really, really painful thing, I understand. But what we all know to be true is that death is final. It's permanent. Like, you can't change that. You can't reverse course. That death is such a fixed thing. It's such a permanent thing. And as painful as death is, there's something about it that is really important for us to build a reality of the world that we live in. In other words, what I'm trying to say is the way we construct reality, the way we know certain things are true in life, is that they're fixed on fundamental things that are permanent. Like, think about it. Everything that we really know that is true about life comes from things that are permanent, things that like are constant. Like I think about the universe. And think about all the elements of the universe that are so significant. Can I tell you what they are? The things that we understand about science, that the way we construct our world comes to certain fundamental principles that never change. Like, for example, gravity. We all know this. Gravity is always on, right? Doesn't come on, come off. It might be there. Gravity is so constant. Like, we are so sure about gravity that we build everything we understand in engineering, in communication, everything is all based on our understanding of something so permanent and so fixed. And here's what we all know to be true. You get in an airplane, you're at 10,000 feet, you decide to jump out without a parachute, guess what's going to happen? You're going to fall and splat, you're done. Because we know it's fixed, it's permanent. And because of that, we can fly airplanes around the world and we can send rockets into outer space because we understand what is permanent. And what I'm saying is that you and I, whether we realize it or not, we build what we believe is true about life on the permanent things. I was thinking about time. Time is very permanent, isn't it? Like it's always moving into the future. It doesn't change. It doesn't slow down. We want it to slow down. We can't reverse it. This is why sometimes some of us regret certain things and we look back and we can't get away from it. Why we made a decision 5 years ago that we're embarrassed about, and but it seems to follow us. Why? Because time is permanent. It's fixed. It's moving. You can't stop it. You can't change it. This is why death is so painful, because death is so permanent. Losing someone is so permanent. You know what else I was thinking about? Because there's a few things in life that are permanent. Most things change. There's a few things that are permanent. You know what else I was thinking about is permanent? Tattoos. Tattoos are permanent, aren't they? In fact, I'm just curious. We're in church, so just a moment of honesty. Let's all just be really honest today. I'm curious, just show of hands, how many of you have ever gotten a tattoo that you later regretted? Raise your hand. Raise your hand if you have, okay. Ooh, a lot of people, a lot of people. My guess is some of you didn't even bother raising your hand, but you have regretted it. You got that tattoo that says no regrets. You know what I mean? Like, or you got one that was spelled wrong by accident. And I don't have any tattoos. Not because I'm against them. Some people would think that maybe like religious reasons and certain churches. I'm not. We're not one of those churches. Like, I'm not against tattoos. In fact, I've thought for a long time, I should get a tattoo. But here's the problem. I can't think of what I want on my body permanently. That's been my big struggle. Like, I'm like, I'll get a tattoo, and I've thought about some things, and then I'm like, but what if I don't like that? And, you know, there's a lot of us, just to be honest, that we got tattoos when we were younger, and you just got something that was really cool, right? And then you got older, and it wasn't so cool. I mean, some of you guys got barbed wire around your biceps, because in the 90s, that was awesome. Yeah, there's some guys in here going, okay, you know, because they're permanent. I mean, there are so many things, and I thought, okay, I'll get this phrase, and I'll get this. But it also matters where you get it, right? Because there's certain things, like when you're 22 years old, there's certain places you can get a tattoo on your body, and it looks cool. But when you're 53 years old, and gravity, the permanent force, takes over, and things start to sag, and now you can't read that anymore. See, that's why I've been so afraid to get one. I might get one of these days. I thought about getting one before this message, but I chickened out. I couldn't figure it out. Part of the reason why was because growing up, we had a family friend, a guy that lived with our family. We weren't related, but he was friends with my parents, and so he kind of was a longtime family friend, still is. And I always remember on his forearm, he had this big tattoo of a serpent. I mean, he's just nasty looking, like serpent wrapped around his arm. And he always hated it. Now, he got it when he was like 19 years old and just graduated from boot camp in the Navy, and him and some guys went to a tattoo shop, and I said, what was the meaning? Like, why'd you get that? And he was like, I was just looking for something cool. And so he had this big serpent that just kind of wrapped on his arms, huge, you know, thing. It's like, oh, that's cool. Well, later in life, he became a person of faith, and when he became a person of faith, he was reading in the Bible what the serpent represented. He was like, oh, I hated this. And so he's like always trying to figure out how to cover it up and wanted to get rid of it. Now, this was years ago where I know we have like laser removal technology today. It's not perfect, but it helped, right? Back then, you couldn't. It was permanent. you had to have it surgically removed. And it just so happens that his dad was a surgeon. And so he went to his dad and he said, I want to get rid of this tattoo. It was so big, his dad was like, you're going to have to get this removed in sections because it was so big. And you can only stretch the skin so far. And so he had this surgery, the first part of surgery, and they took off the head in the front of the serpent, and then they had to stretch the skin over. It was big. It was such a painful and horrible ordeal that he decided he couldn't go through with getting rid of the rest of it. So he has like this 4-inch scar, huge, on his arm with half a serpent coming out of the backside of it. That's real cute, isn't it? See, this is why I don't get a tattoo. Because here's what we know to be true about things that are permanent. And what I kind of have figured out about life is that it tends to be the permanent experiences in life that often tend to bring the most pain and regret. Isn't that true? Like, it's the permanent stuff that we're talking about. It's the things that you wished you could get back that you can't. It's the things that you did that you wish you could unwind. It's the decision that you made. It's the relationship that you broke off. It's the thing that you wish you could get back, like the permanent stuff. It's kind of like when you hurt somebody, maybe even with your words. You ever hurt somebody that you really loved with words? You said something, you called them a name, and the moment you said it, you were like, no, and you try to reel it back in. But how many of you know that the moment it came out, you can't get it back? And you can maybe patch up the relationship, but you know the damage was already done by what you said or what you called that person. And you can't get it back. It's always there, right? And this is why I think that people who experience divorce, it's so painful. Because you had a relationship that at one point you just, this is going to be for life. Like, this is going to last until death do us part. And then all of a sudden it doesn't work. And divorce is so painful because it's such a final end to something that you thought was going to last your entire life. It's painful. This is why when you make a bad decision and maybe end up with a criminal record and maybe you served your time, but what you discover is that your record, your past, continues to follow you into every interview, every job application, every place you go. And you just can't seem to shake free. This is why when you lose somebody or lose a relationship or you lose somebody to death, it is so painful. But can I tell you, I think that's also why the story of Jesus' resurrection is so powerful. I think the reason why it's so powerful to me is because it disrupts everything that we know to be true about reality. Like, this idea that Jesus came back from the dead is so crazy, it's so radical, but there's something also so hopeful about it. And this is why it kind of surprises me that Jesus' own disciples struggled to believe, because not only did he tell them what was going to happen, but I don't know if you know this, Jesus also proved that he had the power to do it before he got killed. In fact, I'd love to share a story with you this Easter. If you bring a Bible with you, or if you love to use the app for the notes feature, I want to share a story with you from John chapter 11. John chapter 11. Now, I know those of you Bible scholars here, and you're probably going, wait a minute, that's not the Easter story. It's not. It's not the Easter story. But I actually think it's a beautiful story that points to what Easter is about. And it's a story that I think a lot of us can really maybe connect with today. And so I want to read, starting with verse 1, John chapter 11. Says this, a man named Lazarus was sick. He lived in Bethany with his sisters, Mary and Martha. This is the Mary who later poured the expensive perfume on the Lord's feet and wiped them with her hair. Her brother Lazarus was sick. So the two sisters sent a message to Jesus telling him, Lord, your dear friend is sick, very sick. But when Jesus heard about it, he said, Lazarus' sickness will not end in death. No, it happened for the glory of God, so that the Son of God will receive glory from this. So although Jesus loved Martha, Mary, and Lazarus, he stayed where he was for the next 2 days. Now, I think we probably could all agree that Jesus' response to this urgent message is a little strange. Because that's not what most of us would do, right? I just want you to imagine with me if you got contacted today out of the blue. Someone texted you or somebody called you, maybe even while you were here, and told you the news that somebody you loved, a close friend, a family member, someone you care about dearly, was in a terrible accident, and they're now in the ICU, critical condition, fighting for their life. Would you not drop all of your Easter plans and rush to the hospital to see them? Of course you would. All of us, I think, would. Ham, dinner, Easter, that can wait. I'm going to the hospital. Now, here we're in a situation where Jesus is, he's a day's journey away, and Mary and Martha have a sick brother named Lazarus, and they're all friends with Jesus. They're close. And they send a messenger to tell Jesus, you got to come back because your friend Lazarus, he's deathly sick. Like, he's not doing well. And back then, when somebody was sick, I mean, you didn't have the hospitals and back, you know, you didn't have antibiotics, you have all those things. And so this is urgent. And Jesus' response is a little strange, is it not? He says, Lazarus is sick. Well, sickness will not end in death. He's not going to die from it. I mean, Lazarus is strong. He's got a good immune system, right? I mean, like, he's going to pull through. Man, I'm reading this and I'm thinking to myself, okay, either Jesus, you're kind of cold-hearted, or he was the kind of person that when I think about how the older generation used to parent. You remember how the older generation used to parent? Like when you'd be playing in a sports in a game or something like this, and you'd twist your ankle and you come up hobbling, and your dad would look at you, can you stand? Can you put weight on? All right, son, get back out there. Come on, walk it off. How many of you had parents that were like that, you know? You're out riding your bike, no bike helmet back then. You hit your head on the pavement, they get you up, dust you off, like, can you see me? Yes, get back on your bike. We don't just fall and quit. We get back on there, you know? And it's like, what about concussions, hey? You know, the older generation used to pay. I feel like Jesus, he ain't gonna die. I mean, he'll pull through, right? But in this moment, John, who's one of Jesus' closest friends and his followers, he's in this moment, and he writes something that kind of grabbed my attention. I don't know if you caught it. But here's John, who's there, and he's watching this whole thing transpire with a messenger coming, and urgently, and you got to go. And here's what John writes in verse 11, or verse 6. He said, although Jesus loved them, he stayed where he was the next 2 days. He didn't rush back. He didn't come to their help, their aid. He just stayed where he was. And if I could be real transparent, I think in that moment, I've had moments in my life where I think I feel a little bit like probably Mary and Martha felt. Have you ever had a situation where you just needed God because nothing else would work? I have. Have you ever had a situation where you prayed so earnestly because if God doesn't show up and he doesn't do something, it's not going to end well? I've had people that I loved, that I've prayed for, God, we need a miracle. I need you to do something. If you don't do something, this person's not going to make it. I've had situations where financially, where I'm like, God, if you don't somehow give me a miracle, like, I'm not going to survive this. We're not going to make it through this. I've had situations where my mental health was struggling so much and facing panic attacks, and it's like, God, I need some help. I don't want to feel this way before. And sometimes when I've prayed and I'm like, God, I need you to show up, it's just delay. Nothing happened. It's like, God, man, where are you? And I imagine I'm not the only one. I imagine in a room this size, maybe most of us have had things that we prayed for and we wanted to believe God for. Maybe someone told you there is a God and that God loves you and that God answers prayers. And so some of you, I know when you were younger and your parents told you that they're separating, that you prayed so hard they wouldn't get a divorce, and then they did. Some of you maybe were in the foster system, didn't have parents, and you prayed month after month for somebody to come and adopt you and want you, and month after month went by and nothing happened. Or as you've gotten older, some of you are single and you've prayed, God, would you help me meet someone? And you still haven't met someone special, and you find yourself single, or maybe you've just struggled with a form of mental illness, and you've battled schizophrenia for a long time, or bipolar disorder, and it weighs on you. You've been depressed for not months, but years, and God, I need you. There's nothing else that's gonna change this. And it just seems like he doesn't show up. And what I've found to be true in my life, and maybe you have, is that those kind of moments where it seems like he doesn't show up sometimes can become these, I think, permanent markers of doubt. It's like there's a time where maybe you're young and you're like, okay, I believe in God, but then you had this situation and God didn't show up. You prayed for this and nothing happened. And so all of a sudden doubt starts to take over your life and you start to become skeptical and you're like, wait, I'm supposed to believe that God loves me? That's why I find it so interesting that John wrote, although Jesus loved them, he stayed where he was. And I thought, why would he do that if he did love them? And I thought to myself, what if maybe Jesus sees things that we don't? What if he does? What if in the moments where God doesn't show up the way you want him to and when you want him to, what if God sees something that you don't? Because when I read this story, I kind of get the idea that maybe he did. Because let me show you this. If you look at what happens, they stay where they are for the next 2 days. And then out of the blue, Jesus just, he just says something that's just kind of startling to his disciples. Look at verse 11. It says, then Jesus said, oh, this is 2 days later. Hey, our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but now I'll go and wake him up. What? Wait, you're just going to go wake him up and he's asleep? The disciples are kind of confused by this. Look at their response. The disciples said, Lord, if he's sleeping, he'll soon get better. Don't wake him up. We all know you need rest when you're sick, right? And verse 13 tells us that they thought Jesus meant Lazarus was simply sleeping, but Jesus meant Lazarus had died. And so in verse 14, he told them plainly, guys, Lazarus is dead. And for your sakes, I'm glad I wasn't there. For now you will really believe. Come, let's go see him. Now, again, this is a little strange, right? I mean, first, we all agree, Jesus said that the sickness will not end in death. And then 2 days later, because Jesus has no urgency about him to go see his good friend, they're just chilling, eating some bread, doing whatever. When Jesus goes, hey, we're going to go back, he's asleep. Well, okay, he's not asleep. He's actually dead. But we're going to go back. Like, what is going on here? And by the way, how does Jesus know that he was dead? No messenger shows up. John doesn't say he doesn't get a text message. He doesn't get a telephone call. None of that. And he just knows that Lazarus. Could it be, this is what I'm saying, that Jesus can see things that you and I can't? It's possible. So they take a full day's journey back to where Mary and Martha are. In verse 17, it says that when Jesus arrived at Bethany, he was told that Lazarus had already been in his grave for 4 days. For 4 days. If you do the math and you understand the context, here's what that means. That the moment that Mary and Martha sent someone to find Jesus, which was a day's journey, Lazarus died that same day. He was actually already dead. And so Bethany was only a few miles down the road from Jerusalem, and many of the people had come to console Martha and Mary in their loss. And when Martha got word that Jesus was coming, she went out to meet him, but Mary stayed in the house. When I see their response, I realize that we all respond to pain differently. And Martha wants to go and talk about it with Jesus. But I think Mary, and some of you might feel a little bit more like Mary. Mary was so filled with grief and hurt and maybe even pain that she can't even leave the house to go see him. Maybe she didn't want to see him. And Martha, when she sees him in verse 21, it says that Martha said to Jesus, Lord, if only you had been here, my brother would not have died. I wonder how many times you've thought something like that before about God. If only you'd been here. If only you had answered my prayer. If only you had done what I thought you were capable of doing, then I wouldn't be in this situation. I wouldn't feel the pain and the ache and the loss that I feel. And what's hard for us to wrap our minds around is when we have a situation in our life that is out of our control, it's in those moments when it doesn't go the way we hope that we tend to blame God the most. Even if God had nothing to do with the accident, God had nothing to do with the disease, God had nothing to do with the situation, but we still find a way to blame God because There's a part of us that wanted to believe that if God loved us, he would change the situation. And because of that, it often leads to incredible disappointment. And I don't know where you may be in your faith journey. I don't know if you have faith or you don't. But what I know to be true is that there are a lot of people that at once maybe wanted to believe or had some faith, but because of their disappointment, that they have maybe pushed themselves away from God. And I'm just saying, honestly, some of you that are here and you're in the building or you're watching this right now, the truth is it's been your disappointment that has kept you away from God, has kept you at a distance from God. That's like part of you wanted to believe, but then it was so painful that you've been hurting and disappointing. And I just wanted to say something to you if that's you in this place today. I want to encourage you with this thought. It is possible to have faith in the middle of your disappointment. You know that? It is possible to have faith and still wrestle with doubt. It is possible to have faith even if you are kind of angry at God. You know how I know that? Because that's Martha. Martha comes out to see Jesus and says, if you had only been here, he wouldn't have died. But then she said something really fascinating in verse 22. She then followed up by saying, but even now, I know that God will give you whatever you ask. But even now, can I just tell you how beautiful and how authentic this moment is with Martha, how powerful the statement that she makes. Here she is grieving. Here she is disappointed. She knows that if Jesus happened to have been around, if he was in the area when Lazarus was sick, he loved him, he would have touched him, he healed all kinds of people, but he wasn't there. And so part of her is holding this pain in her heart and maybe a little bit of anger, but then she also recognizes that Jesus is the one who has the possibility of doing miracles. He's the only one we've ever seen who can touch and can heal and can raise from the dead. And so she's living in this place, can I just say, of authentic faith? She has authentic faith. Can I tell you what authentic faith looks like? Authentic faith is this. It's when you can hold your disappointment in one hand and also hold your belief in Jesus in the other. When you can live with that tension, that's authentic faith. And the truth is that we have a lot more people today that are walking around with fake faith than an authentic faith. Can I tell you what fake faith looks like? It's that kind of person that comes around and goes, oh, I believe in God. I believe in Jesus. Man, I'm so grateful for God. I believe God does miracles. And then the moment something goes wrong in their life, they're like, I can't believe in God. Fake faith is the kind where you say, I'll believe in you as long as my life goes smoothly and no pain and no disappointment. Well, I hate to disappoint you today, but that is not a reality. An authentic faith, and I want somebody, this could be freeing for some of you. You came here, I got a lot of doubts. That's okay. So did Martha and Mary and all of Jesus' disciples at one point. That's authentic faith. And you can hold those two together. And I love what Jesus says to her in verse 23. His response is so beautiful. He said, Jesus told her, Martha, your brother will rise again. And you can tell by her her answer in verse 24 that they're not speaking the same language. Yes, Martha said, he will rise when everyone else rises at the last day. See, Martha believed that there's some kind of culminating time when at the very end of days that we'll all be raised to stand before God, our maker. She believed that. And so when Jesus said, your brother will rise again, she's like, I believe that. But that's not what Jesus meant. And I love, look at verse 25 and 26. This is the beautiful verse. Jesus told her, I am the resurrection and the life. And anyone who believes in me will live even after dying. And everyone who lives in me and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this, Martha? And I would love to put that question to all of us today. What Jesus just said, here's what I would ask you. Do you believe that? Do you believe that? Because that's a bold statement. Can we just all agree what Jesus just said there is kind of bold and maybe a little crazy, right? This is, see, it's because of these things that I can't just hold this value that Jesus was a good moral leader, a great religious teacher, and that's it. In fact, I don't think Jesus gives us the space to believe that about him. And so if you came here today and you're like, well, I mean, I like some things about Jesus, but I just think he was a man like everyone else. Jesus did not give you that option because he said things like this. He said, I'm resurrection and life. And he said, if you believe in me, even when you die, you won't actually die. You'll live. In fact, you won't ever really die. And he wasn't speaking of physical death, but he was speaking of our soul. And he was speaking of the reality of eternity. But can we all agree that if somebody runs around and makes a claim like this, if they can't back this up, you should never trust that kind of person. In fact, you would say that person's so crazy. Not only should we trust them, but maybe we should arrest them. A little crazy. But if somebody, and by the way, there are no other religious leaders throughout human history or faith leaders that have ever made a claim like that. But if there's someone that would make a claim as bold as that to declare, I'm not just a man, I'm the Son of God who has power over the things in this world that you think are permanent. Anybody makes a claim like that and then backs it up, I think we ought to listen to that person. And oh, by the way, if you don't know the rest of the story, he backed it up. Because in that moment, Jesus said, take me to the grave. And they took him to the grave where Lazarus had laid for 4 days, his body already decomposing. And he said, move the stone away. And they're like, no, you don't want to do that. It's going to smell. He said, you have no idea what I'm about to do. And they rolled the stone away. And he looked into the mouth of that cave. And he said, Lazarus, come out. And moments later, Lazarus comes waddling out, wrapped in the grave clothes. He was dead for 4 days. And Jesus brought him back to life in that moment so that we would know that he has power over death. And this was a preview of the resurrection of Jesus. Jesus wanted everybody to know, I can't just do resurrection, but I am resurrection. I don't just do miracles for you, but I am the ultimate miracle. And I'll prove that when I come out of the grave, when I roll the stone out and I come walking out. And this is why Easter matters, is because it's not just a story from 2,000 years ago that's cute and we share in church. But if true, and I believe it is, it changes reality as we know it. You know, all the things that we think are so permanent that we've built our reality on, our truth on? Like we think about death. Death is so final, it's so permanent. Jesus would look at that and say, no, it's not. No, it's not. I'm resurrection and life. Whoever lives in me and believes in me will never, ever die. He wasn't talking about physical death because everybody I know, eventually we're all going to die. But he's talking about the more important matter, which is you don't stop existing, but that you carry on beyond that. Death is not even permanent. Can I just encourage you with this? Your past is not permanent. I know time is moving forward. We can't reverse it. But all of the failures and the sin and the way you've messed up, can I just tell you, when Jesus came and died on a cross, he paid the price for your sin, your past, your screw-ups, my past, my failures, my screw-ups. And guess what Scripture tells us? God now looks at us and he remembers our sin no more. It's gone. He paid for it. He took care of it. And oh, by the way, all the things we think are permanent, they're not permanent. Tattoos, they're permanent, right? Actually, they're not. Because Scripture tells us if you believe in him, even though you die, you'll be raised. And when you're raised, you're given a brand new body. So all of you that got the tattoos that say no regrets, guess what? I got good news for you today. We get a new body. And by the way, if I can put in an order right now, God, I'd like washboard abs and slightly bigger muscles. Like, what I'm trying to say is that so many of us have built a reality for life, a framework for truth, and it's based on everything we think that's permanent. But what I came to declare to you today, that there is only one permanent reality, and his name is Jesus. Only one permanent reality, and his name is Jesus. He's the same yesterday, today, and forever, the beginning and the end. He was around before the foundation of the earth was ever made. He is in all, through all. In fact, Colossians 1 says that all things were created by him and for him and through him. He holds everything together. Can I just tell you, there is one permanent reality. Gravity is not even a permanent reality. God proved, Jesus proved, he can defy gravity. I'm just telling you, the only thing that you need to build a foundation of faith and something that is really true in this life, it is to know Jesus, to believe in him, to live in him. That will change everything, by the way. It changes your future, because guess what? You don't have to fear death. I know a lot of us are maybe afraid of dying one day, but you don't have to fear death. That's not the end. And some of us carried in with us the regret and the shame of our past, and it just follows us. In God's eyes, nah. He's already taken care of that through what Jesus did on the cross. I just want you to get this in your soul today. The permanent, only permanent reality that matters is Jesus. And if you know him, it will bring hope into your life. It doesn't mean your life will be perfect, but all of a sudden it'll give you a new perspective. There's a bigger truth. And the ultimate permanent reality, and his name is Jesus. Why don't you stand up on your feet with me if you would today? I would love the privilege to be able to pray for you. And I don't know where you are with God. I know it's a very personal thing, but I also know that there are a lot of you, whether you're a person of faith or not, that you've got disappointment. Some of you maybe came here today, and the truth is you're a little bit angry at God. It's okay, he can handle it. And I'm here to tell you that you can hold anger in one hand and faith in the other. You can. I don't know if you came here and your mental health has been it's just been so hard lately. I'm the person that believes, because Jesus is alive, that he has the power to still do miracles today. Let me say that again, because some of you need to receive that into your spirit. I believe because Jesus is alive that he has the power to do miracles still today. That your marriage that is hanging on by a thread, I believe that God can speak into it if both parties are willing to turn to him. Some of you battling a sickness, I believe that God can heal you. He may not, but I believe that he can. And I've seen it happen so many times that I have the faith to believe that he still does miracles. And so I want to pray for you. I don't know what your situation is, but God does. And I believe that he wants to reveal himself to you in this moment. So you just maybe close your eyes, if you would, with me. Just bow your heads. And why don't you just have a moment with God right now? Maybe it's been a long time since you've ever talked to God. Maybe you just take this moment to connect with him. God, I pray right now for every person that's in this room, watching online. Every person, God, that maybe showed up here full of doubt. Every person that maybe showed up today carrying their disappointment. Those that maybe showed up here in depression.
Chorus 2.
I just feel like the Spirit of God was just prompting me that there are some of you here that you're really battling depression right now, and it's been hard. You feel like there is no hope. I just declare right now that the Spirit of God will begin to minister to you. Specifically to you, if you're battling with depression, the Spirit of God is ministering to you to bring hope into your life. I speak now to every person that's in this place carrying disappointment of loss. You lost someone. Someone here lost a child. It has become a marker of doubt in your life. You think that God doesn't love you. And I'm declaring specifically to you by the Spirit of God, he loves you. He just sees something you don't. He sees something you don't, and he's meeting you right now. I just declare hope right now begin to swell up inside of your life, your heart. Hope is swelling up. I just pray, God, you begin to minister miracles, God, that you begin to change lives right now. I pray, God, we believe you for miracles. Come on, I just believe that God is here in this moment. And I would love to give you an opportunity by faith to really connect with God. If you have never made a decision, or maybe there was a time when you recognize you have faith, but because of life and the decisions you've made or things that have happened to you, you just drifted away from God. I believe this is a holy moment where I want to invite you by faith to put your trust in Jesus. So I'm going to ask you just to close your eyes again, because I want this to be a personal moment for you. If you're here today and you're just saying, I am ready, there's something coming alive inside of me. Can I tell you that's faith? And that's the Spirit of God who's just revealing that Jesus is real and he's here. And today it's time to make a decision to receive him as your Lord and Savior. If that's your prayer, your decision, today you say, I want to receive Jesus as my Lord and Savior. Today I'm going to live in him and believe in him. If that's your decision, then I'm going to lead you in a prayer. And there's nothing magical about the words. It's about the posture of faith in your life right now. If you're saying, I want to receive him, he is going to meet you and connect with you and change you in a moment, right now. And so if that's your prayer, I want you just to say something like this with me. You say, Jesus, today I receive you as my Lord and Savior. I believe that you came and died for my sin and that you rose again on the third day to give me new life. And so today I give my life to you. I surrender my life to you, my future to you. I believe that you are giving me a new beginning by faith, and I receive it, and I will follow you all the days of my life from this moment forward.
Thanks so much for tuning into this message. I hope that it encouraged you and inspired your faith. If God is doing something in your life, would you take a moment and let us know? We want to connect with you and we want to be able to pray for you. All you have to do is shoot us an email to hello@thex.church, or you can always send us a DM on one of our social media platforms. And if you know somebody that would also be encouraged by this very message, why not take a moment and just share it with them right now? And as always, I want to say thank you to every single person who so generously financially supports this ministry so we can continue to get messages like these out to people all over the world. We believe God is building something special, and you're a significant part of it. Until next time, have a great day.